get in no trouble.
Nah, we're just trying to win this dance contest.
You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astrotalk.
We got the Refugees All Stars, Rubber Devin in the club, Y Club Jean.
Look at here, look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cats talking to her, buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one half hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Check the spelling R-E-F-U-G-E. Get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me. I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My crew slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math. You ain't half niggas out of it. My man's playing true.
Hello,
you
this is Marco. Welcome to CITR 101.9. Well listening to Astro Talk. The mic is playing tricks on me. But anyway, here we are. We're at CITR. And I'm going to talk about astronomy today. Of course, that's my talk show. So, I started to talk about water last week, and of course we need water for life. So water, astronomy is about water, isn't it? And there was a particular property of water. It freezes at a temperature that, from looking at other elements in the periodic table, I think water should freeze at a much lower level. So what implications would that have for us on Earth? If water froze at, let's say, minus 50 degrees Celsius instead of 0 degrees Celsius. So I'll look at that one day. I got to spend time and do a nice show on it, not just blab about it. So today I'm going to talk about the merging neutron stars that created gravitational waves, and they also created a celestial light show. So in the past 2 years, physicists working with mammoth gravitational wave detectors have sensed something go bump in the night, sending invisible ripples through space-time. So what they sensed before were black holes colliding, and black holes, as we know, don't emit light. As soon as light goes in, it never says bye-bye to our universe, to our solar system, or to our universe. They leave the universe. They can't escape that gravitational attraction of the black hole. So when two black holes collide, we're going to sense a huge gravitational wave, ripples out, and it warps space-time. And in the LIGO Observatory, where I visited last year, the 4 times in the past 2 years, they've sensed something go bump in the night. They've sensed invisible ripples through space-time, which are gravitational waves. Well, on October 16th, which is roughly a bit over two weeks ago, astronomers announced the detection of a fifth disturbance. So in the previous 4 disturbances, they were black holes colliding, so all that was sensed was gravitational wave. In this fifth disturbance, they saw something as well. They just didn't see or sense the ripples through space-time, which are gravitational waves. They saw every wavelength of light from gamma radiation to radio waves, and just as physicists had predicted, when the two super-dense neutron stars spiraled into each other, there was a cornucopia of insights, each of which by itself would count as a major scientific advance. On August 17th, 3 massive instruments, the twin 8-kilometer-long detectors of the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory in LIGO, which is LIGO in Hanford, Washington, and Livingston, Louisiana, and the 6-kilometer Virgo detector near Pisa, Italy, spotted waves unlike any seen before. As I said, the 4 previous events lasted for at most a few seconds, and what they detected was gravitational waves rippling at frequencies of tens of cycles per second. And when the two neutron stars collided on October 16th or 17th. Actually, they collided a long time ago, but took thousands of light years for them to arrive on Earth. So the four previous events lasted for at most a few seconds. This new neutron star event, where two neutron stars spiraled into each other, that lasted for 100 seconds. Frequencies climbing to thousands of cycles per second, or thousands of hertz. The previous four signals came from pairs of huge black holes quickly spiraling into each other. But this new signal from a few weeks ago revealed lighter neutron stars that were 1.1 and 1.6 times as massive as the Sun, twirling inexorably together. And what happened was not just gravitational waves, but visible radiation, or radiation other than, or just other than a gravitational wave. So when the gravitational waves happened a few years ago, scientists were so excited because it was almost like a new wavelength of light was discovered that scientists could then examine. So before, they could not detect gravitational waves. So when they did detect the gravitational waves, that was exciting. With this new event, it did give off gravitational waves, but it gave off a spectacular light show as well. So scientists have seen all kinds of light before, so that was not the important event. The important event was that it came from two neutron stars colliding. So black holes are the gravitational fields left behind when very massive stars collapse to infinitesimal points. So they contain no matter that radiate light when a pair of them merges, for example. But in contrast, neutron stars are the dead cores left behind when slightly smaller slightly smaller stars explode in supernova. And neutron stars consist of nearly pure neutrons in the densest matter there is. So a little teaspoon of neutron star matter would weigh as much as Mount Everest. So when the neutron stars collide, they spew debris glowing with light of all wavelengths. So 2 seconds after the gravitational signal, which was detected at Hanford, NASA's orbiting Fermi Gamma Ray Telescope, or Gamma Ray Space Telescope, I'll say that again, NASA's orbiting Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope picked up a blast of high-energy photons called a gamma ray burst. Within minutes, researchers at the LIGO Observatory in Washington and at Livingston in Louisiana confirmed the gravitational signal in their data. It took LIGO about an hour to issue such a detailed alert, but the light show came a few seconds later, and that could be detected from many observatories around the Earth. So when it did happen, with the observatories cooperating, they could triangulate and pinpoint the pretty exact location of the event. All three gravitational wave detectors, so that's the two in the US and one at Pisa, saw the signals. So this also helped triangulate the within a 30 degree square patch of sky, 60 times the size of the moon, and more precise than Fermi's localization. So some of the observatories or some of the telescopes that did observe or did catch the event of the neutron stars colliding, well, I think what happened with some of them is that when the event happened, it was daylight where they were, so they had to wait until the sun set. So imagine that, waiting for something you've waited your whole life for, you studied your whole life for, and then all of a sudden it happens in the middle of the day. So you have to wait agonizingly long wait for those hours for the sunset set, and then you can see what's happening. And the search got off to a slow start, as I said, because part of the sky was in daylight for many observatories. But within hours, five groups had had identified a new source of light in the periphery of galaxy NGC 4993, which they watched fade from bright blue to a dim red in a matter of days. Nearly 2 weeks later, the source began to emit X-rays and radio waves. Isn't that amazing? This event, some people waited a lifetime for it, and it finally happened. So what I believe is the theories were there. People thought, or the scientists made their models, and they predicted if neutron stars collide, this would happen. And guess what? It did happen. In the end, 70 observatories around the Earth and its orbit studied the event. So this is the first time we have a 3D view of an astronomical event. So says Laura Candonati, a physicist at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta and deputy spokesperson for the LIGO collaboration. I think they're building another gravitational wave detector in India. And when I was in Hanford last August, Professor Mike Landry showed me a lot of the equipment they'll be shipping to India for this new observatory. Okay, back to the article. I'm reading an article, and the article, it's titled Merging Neutron Stars Generate Gravitational Waves and a Celestial Light Show. The article is by Adrian Cho, CHO, and it's dated October 16th, 2017. Sorry, I don't have the source. Okay, so back to the article. The merging neutron stars powered a seconds-long gravitational or gamma-ray burst that beamed radiation into space and sparked a kilonova that glowed for days as it generated heavy elements. The combination of gravitational waves and electromagnetic observations scored at least three significant advances. First, it explains the origin of some gamma-ray bursts, the second most powerful known events in the cosmos other than merging black holes. Since the 1990s, theorists have thought that bursts shorter than 2 seconds when neutron stars merge to when two neutron stars collide, there would be a burst shorter than 2 seconds. Longer bursts lasting minutes are thought to spring from the collapse of individual massive stars. The new results clinches the explanations for short bursts. So says Peter Mezeras, a theorist at Penn State University in State College. And quote, it's tremendous. If you have gravitational waves with a burst, you know it has to come from a double neutron star. So this is very exciting stuff. So all these theories, people have worked tens of years, they've worked decades or all their life, and then with this kind of event, all their research, all their hard works come to fruition, and a lot of their theories were confirmed, which must be very satisfying. Okay, so I'm talking about the three significant advances from this score of not only gravitational waves, but the observation of electromagnetic waves from the two merging neutron stars. The second advance was the event reveals a hypothesized object called a kilonova because it briefly shines thousands of times brighter than an ordinary nova. As two neutron stars swirl together and rip each other apart, they should expel neutron-rich atomic nuclei, forming a shroud of matter totaling a few percent of a solar mass. Those nuclei beef up gobbling neutrons in rapid succession and then quickly change their chemical identities through radioactive decay. Now there's two things, one called the R process, which is the rapid process, and I believe there's a S process, which is the slow process. Makes sense, huh? So now we're going to talk about the R process, rapid neutron capture process. That so-called R process, or rapid neutron capture process, should make the shroud glow for a few days and its light should be reddened by heavy elements that soak up blue wavelength. That's just what astronomers saw, said Brian Metzger, a theorist at Columbia University. And quote, it's stunning. All of a sudden, the curtain lifts, and what we see looks pretty close to what we expected. Okay, so there's a nice little picture here. I can't show you the picture, but it shows optical light and jets of gamma ray bursts. And our line of sight to the event was 30 degrees off axis. So I'm not sure if we saw the gamma ray bursts. They'd have to be pointed directly at us for us to see them, or so I believe. I might be wrong. Okay, so I talked about two significant advances from seeing this kilonova, or the merger of the two neutron stars. So here's the third event. The observation of a kilonova scores a third event by solving a long-standing puzzle in nuclear physics. The origin of half the elements heavier than iron, including silver, gold, and platinum. Nuclear physicists have long thought those elements are generated in the R process, but haven't known where in the cosmos that happens, whether in the collapse of a single star or in merging supernovas. I thought what I read before and when I interviewed professors, I thought they happened when the supernova collapses, and then there's the rebound, and the shockwave of energy sends out into the atmosphere, the remaining atmosphere. Then it's heated to hundreds of billions or hundreds of millions of degrees. I thought the heavier elements, heavier than iron, were formed there, but it seems from this article they're not too sure. The new find shows that some, and quite possibly all, of the mystery elements come from neutron star death spirals. I got to think about that, because what happens is, how common are neutron death spirals? How often do neutron stars collide? There's supposed to be one supernova per century in our galaxy. There hasn't been one since the early 1600s. There may have been one, but it may have been obscured from clouds of dust. And there could have been more, but they're still coming towards us. These could have happened hundreds, thousands, or millions of light years, or hundreds of thousands of light years away. So says Witold Nazarisk from Michigan State University in East Lansing. For me, as a nuclear physicist, this is an extremely important result. Okay, that's not a very interesting quote, but anyway, I just did it. Okay, so it says here, it's possible that some or possibly all of the mystery elements that are heavier than iron come from neutron death star spirals. Wow, death spirals. Well, I don't know. They don't know either. So what I'm going to do now, I think I'm going to pause for a break, and when I come back, we're going to talk more about this kilonova. So this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Freeway's long. I got some hot love on the hot love highway. Ain't going home because my baby's gone. She's not dead.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Soundtracking your free love on the free love freeway since 1982.
Long time later, see a cowboy crying. Says, hey buddy, what can I do? Says, I lived a good life, about a thousand women. I said, well, why the tears? He says, because none of them was you. No, he's looking at a photograph.
Of you?
No, of his girlfriend. The video would have shown that, yeah.
It sounds a bit gay.
It's not gay.
Welcome back. I was having trouble queuing some stuff. I tried to queue it up and it wouldn't queue. So anyway, we're back, and let's go back to these neutron stars. So there's a kilonova, and now there was this long-standing puzzle in physics. Where are some of their heavier elements made? They said in a blast like this, where two neutron stars collide, a lot of the heavier elements are made after that. Well, we'll see about that. Okay. Now let's talk about the neutron star merger itself. The neutron star merger presents some puzzles of its own. For example, The gamma rays were relatively faint, even though the burst was closer than any previously measured short burst by a factor of 10. That could be because researchers saw the merger from a funny angle. A gamma ray burst is thought to emerge when jets of hot matter moving at near light speed shoot out along the rotational axis of the newborn black hole, beaming radiation into space like a lighthouse. In this case, observers on Earth may not be looking right down at the jet, but may be viewing it from a slight angle. So it shows here in this photo I have here that it was 30 degrees angle, so we weren't looking directly at the rotational axis, or so it seems. The long lag before astronomers began to pick up radio and X-ray emissions supports that picture, says Raffaella Margutti, an astrophysicist at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, who studied the event with NASA's orbiting Chandra X-ray Observatory. The radio and X-ray signals come from the jet, which at first would have beamed them too narrowly along this axis to be seen from Earth. As the jet slowed, however, radiation would emerge at wider angles, making the signals detectable off-axis. But still, this is amazing. Imagine seeing a signal that's that powerful, and it's very far from Earth. So it hasn't said here at how many light years away the event was. But anyway, the long lag before astronomers began to pick up radio and X-ray emissions supports that picture. Ever since LIGO announced the first gravitational wave event in early 2016, networks of small telescopes around the world have been poised to detect an optical counterpart. So again, let's review. In LIGO, what they witnessed was two massive black holes colliding that gave off a lot of energy. There was three masses of black holes that was consumed in the event. The rays touched off by this latest event was won by, I'm talking about the optical counterpart. So LIGO only observed the gravitational wave. There was no optical radiation from that event. Now this optical event, when the two neutron stars collided, touched off by this latest event, the race was won by Ryan Foley of the University of California, Santa Cruz, and his colleagues. They use a 1 meter telescope on Mount Hamilton in California and on Cerro La Campanas in Chile to follow up the LIGO Virgo alert. At 23:33 universal time, 10 hours and 52 minutes after the gravitational waves arrive, the team used the telescope in Chile to snap an image of NGC 4993, and Charles Kilpatrick, a postdoctor at UC Santa Cruz, saw a bright spot not visible in archival images of the galaxy. What he said was, "Found something," he remarked coolly in an online message exchange. Within the 40 minutes, four other teams had independently discovered the same optical object. Rumor sped almost instantly over the internet. Within days, other scientists and journalists knew the outlines of the discovery, and the LIGO and Virgo teams struggled to keep a lid on the news until today's press event. That was no easy task, given the fact that astronomers tend to work in small, highly competitive teams. And so there's a race to say, "I did it first." Nevertheless, astronomers and astrophysicists came together to write a single compendious paper about the event. It has been submitted to the Astrophysical Journal Letters, and some researchers say it has 4,600 authors, roughly one-third of all astronomers. In addition, individual groups are publishing dozens of other papers in Science, Nature, and other journals, many concurrently with announcement. With one spectacular event in the bag, the era of gravitational wave astronomy has begun. The next step is simply to see more such events and begin to do statistical analyses on them, so astronomers say. But for the moment, the entire community is basking in the glow of the discovery and the stunning success of its models. So says Professor Howell. I can't see his first name. I'll give his last name. where am I? Sorry. Sometimes I wonder whether we're all just mucking around. It's moments like this that reassure me that science works. So again, what happened? This is the end of the article. So what happens is scientists make models. They, from their observations, and from their physics and astronomy they learn, and from their minds, from their wonderful minds, they construct models. They say, well, this is my theory. This is how I think it works. And then all of a sudden, they spend 10, 20, 30 years doing this, and they work hard at it. And with one little event, all their theories are confirmed. So as Professor Howell says, it's moments like this that reassure me that science works. So this is a wonderful event. It's imagine, I still hope that we'll get to see Betelgeuse go supernova. It's 500 light years away. It could have already gone supernova maybe last night, and it'll take 500 years for the light to reach us, so we won't know. We don't know these things until they... It never said as any in the article how far NGC 4993. So maybe I'll look that up. So anyway, okay, hang on. Hang on, I'm trying to get out of this. So basically what I want to look for now is how far is NGC 933? It's not letting me do anything, this computer. It's being stubborn. So anyway, it was quite an exciting event, and hopefully I can get my friend Mike Landry on. As I said, I went to LIGO, and I recorded about 3 hours of stuff, and my new recorder that I bought didn't record at all, and it could be just a simple thing of getting a big enough memory chip. So now I'm looking up NGC 4993, and maybe it will tell us how far away it is. So I'm going to click it. I'm going to Google it. And all you young guys do. Google, I do Yahoo. Okay, so NGC 933, I'll look that up. And so today we were looking at gravitational waves from this event, which was two supernovas or two neutron stars colliding. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk. And next week, as I said, I hope to do something on plain old H2O, because water is important for life. So thank you for listening. Have a nice day. Okay, there we go.
Free love on the free love freeway. The love is free and the freeway's long. I've got some hot love on the hot love highway. Ain't going home because my baby's gone. She's not dead.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, soundtracking your free love on the free love freeway since 1982.
Long time later, see a cowboy crying, says, hey buddy, what?